And oh, that was abrupt. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the Banff Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty, and this is part of an ongoing series we like to pretentiously call RPG Behind the Scenes, in which we talk to creators about their design process and whatnot. And with us today is Mr. Eric Bloat from Bloat Games. How are you doing, sir?
I am doing wonderful. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being on. And for any of our listeners who maybe aren't as tuned in to RPGs as guys like Jacob and me, could you give us a brief rundown of your credentials here?
Sure. I'm most notably known for Dark Places and Demigorgons. I'm the owner of Bloat Games, and we make games like Dark Places and Demigorgons, Survive This Zombies, we got Survive This Vigilante City, The Blackest of Deaths, all kinds of stuff. We got new stuff coming out for DCC, with just like a True Vigilante. We're doing our first sci-fi thing on Kickstarter, which is The Blackest Space. And then in my infinite downtime, I write for some other companies. So I just did some stuff for Aliens and Asteroids. And that just came out the other day, which is The Fate of the Solar Chaser. So yeah, just all kinds of good stuff.
So, just to give people a reference point, it sounds like you are very deeply invested in the OSR space of RPGs these days.
I am. I'm slowly streaming out, because I love all RPGs, but the OSR has always been like my home. I jokingly say I was OSR before there was OSR, and I've just always I've always gravitated towards that, and I really enjoy the community that's risen up around the OSR. So,
all right, cool. If I was looking to get into the community for OSR, where do I go besides, say, Dragon's Foot and Tinkar's Tavern?
Well, really, I was going to say Tinkar's Tavern is probably the best place, but also I recommend starting with on YouTube. There's several channels out there, like Questing Beast. He does a lot of almost exclusively OSR reviews and OSR content. Then there is also like Questwise is another channel that's devoted to primarily OSR stuff. And then just on Facebook, they got OSR Gaming. OSR Brazil is a great and active group that for those people who don't know, Brazil is huge into the OSR. I would say about 30% of my business is from Brazil. So that's a significant chunk when you're an American publisher. So yeah, so there's lots of places to find it. Facebook and YouTube probably the easiest.
I had no idea about Brazil. That's pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I should note just because my audience kind of skews towards superhero guys, that as the publisher of Venture City, or Survive This Vigilante City, sorry, mistake there, you're publishing one of the hottest superhero games out this year.
I am. I'm very proud of that. That was definitely a love letter of mine to specifically to the superhero cartoons of the 90s, like the Batman animated series, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, X-Men, and Spider-Man, and which is something that I loved, and I hadn't seen that much represented in just gaming. Most of the time, most gaming represents more of the comic book side of it, and I tried to take it in a little different thing. But yes, feel very fortunate that it's taken off. We're now working on our third and fourth book. We've had two very successful Kickstarters, and so I feel very, very blessed. We got a lot of third-party support, third-party publishers who are publishing content for it. And it's just definitely went from me just being known as the Dark Place and Demigorgon guy to me being known as the superhero guy now. So very, very nice.
Okay. Hey, I should, I don't want to plug too much stuff early, but your Survive This Zombies second edition is on sale now for like less than $4 on DriveThruRPG's Halloween sale.
$3.49. Yeah, it's one of the big ones. In fact, over on Tinkar's Tavern, they just put out a list of five that they recommend, and both Survive This Zombies and Dark Place and Demigorgons are both on sale right now for $3.49 through DriveThru, and they both made his top five of horror games you need to pick up for Halloween. So I was pretty pretty blown away by that.
That is definitely pretty cool. And of course, there's a sale right now for Halloween, so it's a good time to grab these. So now that all of the shameful shilling is out of the way, let's talk about your creative process. You say you're drawn to the OSR. So can you kind of, you know, how'd you first get into publishing? How'd you decide I want to go from being a GM and a player to being a guy who creates games for, you know, other people and get into, you know, that side of the operation?
Right. Well, I've always been a writer. I've always wrote poetry. I write songs. I'm also a musician, but I've always been, I've always come back to writing, write short stories. And in my gaming, I used to have, well, I still do actually, binders of these scenarios written up where, like, we would be playing Rifts, the role-playing game. And I made up, like, some stuff to be, like, to play as, like, aliens versus predators on Rifts. And so we would, you know, I would make these scenarios, and people would keep borrowing those scenarios from me. And they're, like, handwritten, you know, like, a couple hundred pages in these big 3-inch binders. And people would keep borrowing those scenarios from me. And after being away from the OSR, or being away from gaming for a while, because I had little kids, my kids were getting older. And I started just looking on YouTube one day, and I kind of stumbled my way into the OSR and was like, oh, this is amazing. And I saw all these amazing people who were publishing stuff, and I kept watching. And then one day I said, you know, I think I could do that. And a year later, I had my first game released, and 3 years later, I am still chucking stuff out. So it's that's really how I got into the OSR, was just through my background in writing and gaming, combining it together.
All right. I got to put the brace for a second. I have gotten so used to having Jacob Blackman on my podcast, I neglected to give him a proper introduction.
No worries.
To any of our viewers, Jacob is a charming fellow in the upper right-hand corner of your screen, next to the StreamYard Mallard. And Jacob, you're an artist and a writer.
Indeed. And a man of very few words.
Okay, we can just go with that then. Eric, so I'm a little neurotic about writing. When I was GMing, and now when I'm writing stuff for publication, I tend to get highly caffeinated, and I like to barricade myself in a coffee shop or, you know, sometimes restaurants in the back booth and just, you know, obsessively write until I can't write anymore. Mm-hmm. I've come to find out from doing these interviews that's kind of the exception, especially among pros. People have a more pragmatic approach. So let me ask you, what's your preference for, you know, when you actually have to do, you know, heads down writing, doing the creative part? How do you like to do that?
I like to get caffeinated and write till I can write no more. Actually, I'm much like you. Okay. I found what works for me best is I will always have at least 5 Word documents open at the bottom of my screen. And what I do is I write until I either run out of good ideas or I get stumped on one, and I just move on to the next one, and I just circle through. So when I say that I'm working on a project or a book, I'm really working on like 5 to 7 projects or books at one time. And that's one of the ways that I'm able to get as much done and be kind of as prolific as I've been is just by never wasting a down moment. I know some people will tell me that they wait for like inspiration to hit them, or if they get stuck, they really sit there and beat their brow until the answer comes to them. And I don't do that at all. I just keep going. So I'm constantly putting in the keystrokes is how I get it done.
I know sometimes for me, if I can shift between left brain and right brain stuff, like in one tab I'm doing stat blocks, the other one I'm doing, you know, more background and bio material. Just just seems to help sometimes. You've got a wide portfolio between fantasy, sci-fi, superhero stuff. Do you get burned out on one genre, then have to hop over to something else for a while, or how's that work for you?
I do. I not necessarily even a genre. I'll get burned out on one particular product. Like when I wrote Dark Places and Demigorgons, I was so inspired at the time that I really wrote that one almost straight through, and then turned it over to my writing partner Josh Palmer, and he went through and was able to add and contribute stuff. But the initial, the mainframe for that game was written just over a weekend. But the way I normally do it is not just focusing on one long thing, because I'll get burned out. I'll end up switching to something else. And that happens occasionally. Sometimes I'll put down projects for a year at a time, and then I'll pick it back up and I'll read something that I wrote, and I'll either think, oh God, well, usually I think, oh God, that's terrible. And but occasionally I'll read something, I'll go, oh, that's really good. And that'll inspire me to start again and start pushing for that one to be finished.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed with Dark Places of Demogorgons when I first encountered it, especially considering it built on the games of old school, on how interesting it plays and quickly it plays, so you can get into a group playing it very 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 fast and all in one night, and yeah. Which is especially good, especially considering the type of game that it is, where it. Much like what it's trying to emulate, that being, you know, Stranger Things and mm-hmm. those 80s kid versus monster films, mm-hmm. It helps to kind of throw that all together in that what's going on? I don't know what's happening. What's going on? Quick games like beer and pretzel games like we enjoy.
Very much so. Yeah, I'm really proud of the way that one turned out. Well, there's a few that I like. There's some that, you know, as I think all creatives do, you look back on, you go, oh, if I'd only had more time, or if I'd only done this. But Dark Place and Demogorgons, for what it does, I think it does it pretty well. I'm pretty proud of that one, and thank you for the compliment. I really appreciate that.
Hey, I guess we should note. Sorry, go ahead, Jacob.
I was going to say, just at the same time, it has enough. It has enough robustness to it where it can also easily be a long-term campaign.
Correct. Yeah, that's one of the things that I really like about it is that, and not just that, but also it can be real kind of lighthearted. I hear a lot of people tell me that they play with their kids and they kind of play like a Scooby-Doo-ish type game, and then I hear on the flip side, you know, hardcore horror people play in it, and they play it much more like a, you know, John Carpenter film. So it's got that variation, and the system has you're allowed to pull out and put in as much into it as you want. So it can either be lighter, or, you know, you can crunch it up some.
I guess we should note, you've got a whole franchise going there. We say Dark Places and Demogorgons. People think about one book, but you've got, I see a bundle right here with four or five books easy, and then you've got a cryptid manual, specific ones for vampires, and just all kinds of different, you know, ghost hunters, specific USO book.
Don't forget the werewolf book that has my art on the cover.
I didn't know there was a werewolf book with your art on the cover.
There is. And you'll actually find a lot of Jacob's art strung kind of throughout our games.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yep.
That's cool. Hey, you have a funny story about the cryptid manual, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Well,
is that a no-go area? Sorry.
It finally came to an end, but we did have an ongoing issue where someone wanted us to remove the fake redactions in the cryptid manual because they thought that I knew the secrets of where Bigfoot really was. So,
do you, Eric?
Yeah, no, I don't. Josh Palmer. Look up Josh Palmer on the internet, my writing partner. He knows everything. I don't know anything. That's for him. Email him.
All right. Hey, it's easy for us to laugh, but I mean, there are some people for whom cryptids, almost occupy like a religious space for them.
Yeah.
Sounds like you met some of those folks.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, I always joke with my wife and say, well, my celebrity, that I run into all kinds of people and people know me. One of the drawbacks, it's very, very rare, but occasionally you meet people who kind of are obsessive and a little bit on the scary side. And that's what that situation was there. That was one of the ones that definitely crossed the line to where you're like, I'm not sure about this. So
you're right about superheroes. There's a lot less of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. that does not happen as much. No.
No one ever asks me over email wants the truth about Green Lantern. It just,
right.
Well, all right. If you were giving advice to someone who was newly coming into the RPG industry and thinking about, you know, jumping from being a player, a GM, into a publisher, other than, oh my God, don't do it, what advice might you give them?
Start small. Write and complete a project, a small project. So write like an adventure. Set your goal for 16 to 32 pages tops, and write and produce from beginning to end that before you jump right into it. What happens with, and I get a lot of people reach out to me. I try to be as vocal as I can that, you know, I will do my best to help whoever I can out there who's doing it. I don't have all the answers, but typically at this point, I might know who would have the answer. So I feel kind of a responsibility to help out anyone who's getting into the publishing. Cause a lot of people helped me at the beginning. So, but one of the things that I see a lot of people struggle with is everybody has their game that they've been working on or that they've been thinking of since they were a kid. They want to write that game, that, you know, 400 page Zweihänder game. And the problem is that is such a Herculean task to take on. Most people in their life have never done a real project of that size and scope and magnitude. And it's much easier to take on a smaller project and to get it finished and then go forward. Not only are you going to get your name out there on something that, you know, people will start recognizing you, so when you do write the bigger games, there'll be more some recognition and a little easier road to success. But also it gives you a chance to see exactly what it's like before diving in. I see so many people who get caught up and they stop because it's just overwhelming. So my biggest thing that I tell everybody is start small. And I'm telling you this from a place of experience because I did not do that. And I was fortunate enough to just persevere and work my way through. But if I could change that for anybody, start small.
Yeah, I pretty much focus exclusively on writing short books and adventures myself just for that reason, because anything longer than about 50 pages, I start to get real anxious about. So small, discreet, can see the end. So mm-hmm. It might be journalism training. I was told there's no subject you can't cover comprehensively in 3,000 to 5,000 words. So might be where I'm coming from on that one.
Yeah.
What about promotion? Do you ever run ads, or you mainly just focus on social media, or what's your approach to that?
The only time I run ads is on during Kickstarters. I'll run an ad just to pick up the, you know, the few people who have. I found that with Kickstarter, what I do is typically I'll run a $100 ad on Facebook, and so with the Kickstarter, the way the numbers break down, you run a $100 ad that's going to hit like 12,000 people. You're going to get about 200 clicks on your website. So it becomes a numbers game. If you get five people to sign up for your Kickstarter, you paid for your $100 ad. So I find that is beneficial. Aside from that, I don't do any other ads. It's all self-promotion of, you know, I make YouTube videos or I'll post things in communities, and I just try to tell people who will listen that you know, this is coming out. Unfortunately, I've made it to a place to where I got some really great people who support me, who they tell people about it. And so the self-promotion is lessening as other people are doing promotion on my behalf, and I really appreciate them too.
Now, Eric, I before you said something just now, I had forgotten you had a YouTube channel.
Yeah. It's Eric from Bloat Games. I go on there, I ramble on about games that I love. Sometimes I'll talk about my games. It's been a while. It's actually been like a month or so since I posted anything. My posts are getting fewer and far between because with the amount of projects that Bloat Games has been taking on, it I felt like I was starting to just go on and be the guy who only talks about his games. And that's never what I wanted to be. I wanted to, you know, talk about other people's games and promote just the community in general. So now I kind of wait till I got something to talk about. Or if there's something like RPG a day, that initiative, I took part, I made it about halfway through the month. So I got like 16 posts out about RPG a day and things of that nature.
Okay. Yeah, it looks like most of your videos, you do very short videos. Like, looks like most of them are under 15 minutes.
Yeah. I typically try to get in and out for like a 5-minute video. I'm not a very tech savvy person. So the video is just a camera on me, typically holding up a book saying, "Hey, check this out." And this is what I like about it. I never do any like scorching reviews. If you're looking for somebody to tear a game apart, you'll never see that from me. I'd rather shine a positive light on something that's good than shine a negative light on something that's not as good. Cause I don't think anybody tries to make a terrible game. Sometimes it just happens. And so I try to shine a light on the positive. So if you see me holding a book, typically that means I can save you 5 minutes. Typically that means I like the book. If you want to see why I like the book, I'll go into in-depth and on the review.
All right. Yeah, it's easy to find negativity online. It's nice to find positive reviews.
Yeah.
So absolutely.
So you ever get dry for inspiration? You ever have to search for ideas, or pretty much you got an active treasure trove of childhood memories that you kind of mine?
Unfortunately, almost to my detriment, I never run out of ideas. I am my wife calls me hyper creative. I always have to be doing something that's on the creative side. Otherwise, I feel like I'm going to burst. And so no, I running out of ideas. It's more of running out of time to make all the ideas. That's the bigger problem for me.
Understood. Well, hey, talking about ideas, is that right if we pivot and talk about your latest Kickstarter right now, The Blackest Space?
Sure. Yeah, definitely. We can definitely talk about that.
All right. Let me try something a little bit new here. It doesn't always work. I'm going to see if I can share the screen and show people your Kickstarter here real fast. All right. There we go. You guys see that?
Yes, yeah, I do.
Right off the bat, I got to say that cover art is gorgeous.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's by Dean Spencer. And Dean is one of my favorite fantasy artists right now. This is obviously not a fantasy piece, but I love his artwork, and I was able to pick that one up I was like, okay, I want to see this game. And that's where we started with and how we came up with it.
Yeah, it's you do have a lot of cool artwork on here. Scrolling down, I really like this piece here. I want to call it a fish man, but I don't know if it is a fish man. What would you call that?
It's one of our aliens. In fact, if you scroll down just a little bit more, I think we'll actually see the name. I can't remember off the top of my head. It is
the Asalas.
Asalas. Okay. I didn't want to call it the wrong one. Josh Palmer. My writing partner, he actually wrote this entire game, and so he would kill me if I mispronounced or if I misnamed his aliens.
So. Yeah, Josh is a good guy. He's actually he helped do some of my conversions for Vigilante City products.
So. Okay, yeah. Josh is he is my childhood best friend and an adult writing partner. So we've been together since I was probably 12 years old.
Nice. Oh, good Lord, this is frightening.
Yes.
Good Lord.
I love that. And that's a playable race.
Some people like playing the weird stuff. So yep. good on you for having a real weirdy race as it's put in TFOS.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And I think we have got through the art. We're on to the wall of text section of the Kickstarter. But
yeah,
that is something else there. So tell us about The Blackest Space. What's going on here?
All right, so with The Blackest Space, The Blackest Space is kind of a sequel to a fantasy game that I created called The Blackest of Deaths. And The Blackest of Deaths was a hyper deadly game. Just to let you know, you're still on the screen with.
Sorry. I thought I was. I didn't. Okay.
No problem. I just didn't want you to show something you weren't expecting.
Sorry.
But so the Blackness of Death was it's kind of a hyper deadly fantasy game, very grim dark, very low chance of survival. You know, very very much old school in attitude and design. But the design actually, the game design actually is more has a more of a modern aesthetic. It's a whole bunch of changes. It's D20 based, but a lot of it's not. What you're familiar with D20. And so I, while I was working on that one, I wrote that one myself, and Josh took my text and I told him to read it. And about a month later, he sent over his notes for mine, and attached was also the Blackest Space. And he and I had been talking about doing a space game for a while, and he had converted and added to and expanded quite a bit to my game, and came up with the Blackest Space using the same game engine. So it's pretty sweet. And in fact, if I'm honest, I think it works better in his game than it necessarily does for fantasy. So it turned out to be a win-win-win all the way around.
All right. Now, the Blackest of Deaths, I remember when that came out, I want to say a couple months ago, right?
Well, the Ashcan version is out, but there's going to be a deluxe version that has that's going to essentially double the page count. You're going to have a lot more options, a lot more stuff. And then, of course, you know, we had all the Kickstarter stretch goals that were added, so we're going to have a lot of guest writing in from people like the Lone Bards, Brandon Aiden, James Spawn, you know, just all kinds of good people. And so that'll be coming out probably to the public in January. It's going to be released to the Kickstarter backers at around the end of November is when they'll get the print copies, but the actual digital copies will be going out this weekend.
Okay. All right. Now that was, I mean, we're going for a very specific kind of dire old school to borrow your marketing phrase, where some of your characters are going to die, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah. It was made kind of, at the time I'd watched I'd had two things. I'd watched a video where people were talking about that, that a GM should never kill a character, that there's absolutely no reason why that should ever happen. And then at one of my games, at a con game I was running, a player did something stupid and his character died. And he jumped up and told me I didn't have the right to kill his character. He paid to be in this game for 4 hours and made a huge deal. And so this was kind of my my rebuttal to his accusations. Was I'm going to make the game that, you know, I wanted as a kid. And once you get past the idea of, hey, some of these games are going to, or some of these characters are going to die, it's really not about that. It's just there's always that chance of death. It more becomes about how long can I keep this character alive? And so that is the real essence of the game in a nutshell. is not hey, this is the game where everybody's character dies. It's more of how long can I keep this character alive? Oh, you only lasted one adventure? I made it 4 adventures. You know what I mean? That's kind of that was my thought process behind the design of it.
Mm-hmm. I gotta say that is a simple but evocative cover you've got going on there too.
That is, and that's actually another piece by Dean Spencer, the same guy who did the cover for the Blackest Space. Totally different style. That's actually just his line art done through a filter there on Photoshop. But yeah, I thought when I saw that, I said, oh, that will work. That tells everything that I want them to know about the game in one picture. So, and with my games, I always like to feature as much art in the games as I can. That's one of my favorite things. When I was a kid, I would go in and buy games solely based on their art. I would look at the cover of the book. I'd flip through the book. If the art caught me, I'd buy the game before ever reading it, and so art with me is a big deal, and particularly with the Blackest Death and the Blackest Space, we really went out of the way to make sure that every piece, you know, there's no filler art in there that shouldn't be there. Everything there is either to support or promote the game and into a new direction, or into to show off or highlight something about the game. There's nothing there that I think anybody will look through and go, oh, that feels out of place.
Yeah, that almost looks like some kind of Gothic Victorian sort of image there. That's did a really nice job on that. So, out of curiosity, you ever hear of a video game called The Darkest Dungeon?
I have not, no.
Oh, okay. It came out a few years ago. It had a sort of a similar design aesthetic in that, it was old-style dungeon crawler, simple animation, just like, and the whole point was it's going to be grim. Some of your characters are going to die.
They get curses. They suffer phobias and personality disorders. Especially if you have to fight creatures in the dark, you always want to keep your torch lit.
Yeah, you can get PTSD in the dungeons. You get back to town, you have to recover for a while before you can go back out. It's back in the 80s, I played in games that were that bad. You pick up diseases when you're in the dungeons, and you had to go to a chimerge and get healed and that kind of stuff. But that's cool stuff. So with the current Kickstarter, you guys are doing an OSR space thing, but it's not really, it's not a Star Frontiers OSR. It's sort of like OSR rule set, but using it in a way maybe it hasn't been used before.
Yeah, it's more, I like to say dungeon crawling in space, if that makes sense. So it's kind of, the closest I could give you would be, imagine Star Wars meets Star Trek meets grim fantasy. That's grim dark fantasy. That's what we were going for. And it really has a very unique feel. It's not going to be your normal space game. Like, it's not going to be like a White Star, which, don't get me wrong, I love White Star. It's one of my favorite games. And it's not going to feel like Traveler. It definitely has its own tone and feel. A lot of the writing, Josh, on this one, he's hid several references to 80s hair metal, heavy metal bands. Not hair metal, but heavy metal bands. So I know there's some stuff from Slayer in there, like one of the abilities is called Angel of Death, and stuff like that. So for the people with the savvy eye, they'll catch a lot of stuff that's hidden there. But that's kind of the tone we're going for.
Okay. Any comparisons to Warhammer in terms of tone?
Warhammer
40K, I guess I should say.
Yeah, no, I've only ever played Warhammer Fantasy, and for that I only really played it like twice. So I couldn't make a fair comparison. Possibly, okay. But
All right. Just curious. And so this is going on right now, and you guys have already funded, and you've got I'm gonna speak out of turn, but I thought you had 10 days left, so you're in the stretch goal chase at this point, right?
We are. Yeah, the next stretch goal the first stretch goal comes in at $2,000, and okay. that's going to be some additional art by artist Phil Stone. He's the artist who did the interior art that you saw further down on the page, and so we got that coming up, and then we got more stretch goals. At 3,000 is going to be some additional art, but then there's also going to be an adventure by Josh Palmer, and then at 4,000 we got some more additional content that's going to be added to the existing book. The book is written and been play tested at this point, but there's some stuff that people specifically asked for once we started with the Kickstarter, and one of the things that we pride ourselves on is if we're making a game, if there's still time and room to fit it in. And it's something that more than, just like a person wants, we try to go out of our way to make sure that that happens. We want everybody to have the best game to them that they could possibly have. And Kickstarter gives us a great way to do that, where you can work with your community, improve the game, give them more of what they want, and hopefully build a relationship that'll bring them back for the next one.
All right. Yeah, I noticed that you guys keep things pretty simple. You don't I know that some Kickstarters you'll have, you know, you guys stop at $20. Some will have a $100 level or higher level where you can, you know, as you say, contribute stuff into the world of the game. But you guys keep things pretty simple in that regard.
You know, we've done it differently in the past. The only thing that really is always in there that I like to point out is we always have a financial hardship level, like you see right there at the $9 level. And that is one of the things. And it also says, you know, if $9 is too much, just contact Eric Bloat, either through Kickstarter or through social media, and he'll get you taken care of. That's one of the big things. I grew up very, very poor and couldn't afford a lot of role-playing games growing up. And so I never want anybody not to be able to play our games because of a financial disparity. We don't question what your reason for having a financial hardship is. If that applies to you, then, you know, if you believe it applies to you, then we say go ahead and use that one. And again, if $9 is too much, you know, contact me. That's the only one that we try to have on all of our Kickstarters is some kind of financial hardship. Sometimes we'll go all out and we'll have the big crazy goals. With this one, we were keeping it more streamlined, more simple.
All right, cool. Yeah, you are the first Kickstarter I've ever seen have that. Some people have that $5, you know, thanks for contributing level, but that's the first time I've seen people do an outreach like that. And
I wish I could get credit where credit was due. I was backing a Kickstarter and I saw that, and I said, man, that's awesome. Why isn't more people doing this? And so I borrowed an idea from a Kickstarter, and I cannot remember for the life of me which one it was, but since that Kickstarter, I've included that on every one of our Kickstarters.
Yeah, personally, I think it's a really great thing because I'm constantly seeing these Kickstarters, and they're like, and for $20, you'll get our PDF. And I was like, really? You're charging that much for a digital product? Seriously, if you're charging more than $10 for a digital product, that's a little much.
You gonna get us some angry emails here, Jacob?
Yeah. I'm saying it as it is. It's a book I can understand, but a digital product, you know, you'll get a lot more buys if you bring that price number lower.
Well, and I don't want to take a left hand turn into finance of RPG publishing, but
I understand the finance. As an artist, I charge a lot of money for the work I do. And that's
where I was going to go, because I mean, as Eric said earlier, it's kind of my aesthetic too, is I want to have an image as much art as I can afford. I want in the book. Mm-hmm. Usually I aim for an image every four, sometimes, you know, more pages, you know, just because I want to, you know, visual presentation is important to me and it adds up. I mean, yeah. I know you always are, guys, past something I've been thinking about co-opting, which is going with the black and white black and white line work. Which saves some money, because I was trying to follow in the example of Mutants and Masterminds, where you've got full color art, which gets spendy.
Yeah, it definitely ends up. But even the line art, you know, if you get enough pieces, will add up. And one of the things that not to run off on the tangent, but one of the things that, you know, a lot of people don't put into or don't think of is like good publishers, or let me say publishers out there who are doing the right thing, will pay a fair wage for artwork. And if you do that, especially if you're getting a huge book that requires a lot of artwork, it can easily become a very, very, not, I don't want to say money pit, but you can spend a lot of money just on getting the art for it. So there's a you know, a lot of people won't or don't realize that when they look at your books, they'll ask you, well, why is it this much? Because
there's, you know, no one's getting rich. We're not going to the Bahamas on this
one. Right. One of my kind of, I would say, our biggest failures at Bloat Games was actually the cryptid manual for Dark Places and Demigorgons, which by far, if you look at that book, is the best book we've put out, hands down. None of our books look like that. That book was laid out by Brandish Gilhelm, aka Runehammer. He also did all the interior art. But there was a thing going on in the community that at the time where people were saying, they were tired of seeing amateurish looking products. You know, put your money where your mouth is. They're willing to pay more for a product. And so I did the Cryptid Manual, and we charged more, and we had a very successful Kickstarter. But after the Kickstarter, it hit DriveThruRPG, and until very recently when the price dropped, it just sat on DriveThruRPG. I was selling, two or three copies a month. And for my level, that's a quite a bit less than our normal quantities that we would sell for Dark Place and Demigorgons. And again, it is by far the best looking book that we have. So it was a shame that it didn't take off more. But now it's re-entered I think it's almost up to the top 10 on the OSR charts because the price dropped and people are starting to find it. And so it's getting a second life.
Yeah, I have found that you can really exhaust your entire audience on Kickstarter.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, definitely a good looking book there. And you guys are a silver seller. And I think maybe somewhere between 5-2% of products on DTRG even make it to, like bronze. So mm-hmm. You guys are definitely doing well for the, marketplace.
Well, but that is a little misleading. The silver seller on that was actually achieved mainly through the Kickstarter.
Kickstarter backers, yeah.
Yeah, that's all Kickstarter backers. The post Kickstarter backer was a completely a completely different animal on that one.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. Well, Eric, it has been a pleasure talking to you. We're coming up on the hour. Any closing thoughts, things we want to talk about before we wrap up?
No, just the main thing, if you like what publishers are doing out there, support your independent publishers. I don't want to say pay a little extra, but take care of your independent publishers. Your independent publishers take care of your freelance writers, freelance artists, and stuff like that. So they need your support to be able to support the outreaches of the rest of the community. And then beyond that, if you're ever interested in publishing, look me up on Facebook, look me up on pretty much any social media except for Twitter, because I can't figure out Twitter. But look me up. I'll be more than happy to try to help you in any way I can. And because I don't believe that there's too much competition in the world. I think that a rising tide lifts all boats. So let's try to do this, and I'll try my best to help you out.
Well, thank you, sir. Appreciate that. Jacob, do you have any closing thoughts before we call it a day?
I'm just taking a look at what you have here for the Kickstarter for Blackest Space. I really like this game mechanic of the hindrance and benefit. It's pretty simple and adds a nice unique element to the game where whenever you make a D20 roll, something either good or bad could potentially happen besides the success or failure itself. I think that's a really nice mechanic, and I'm looking forward to trying to test that out in when I get a chance to play this.
Yeah, that was something that I got from Ivan Mike 1968, who's on YouTube. He was trying to come up with something that could give you versus doing a dice pool where you could have successes and failures. And so I kind of took what he was working on and mutated it into something a little different. But yeah, the fact that you can still have a successful attack and something bad happen, or you can have a terrible or unsuccessful attack and something positive come from it. And with it only being on the one or the six, allows it doesn't happen every time. So it's not something that wears itself out or slows the game down. It's something that definitely adds to and doesn't subtract from.
Cool. I was going down the rabbit hole reading your various classes on the
there. Yeah, we got 15 classes and 12 playable races, so there should be something in there for everybody, for all types of gamers, and then, you know, a whole galaxy of with the history behind it.
You guys say you're kind of combining the two big space opera franchises, Star Wars and Star Trek. So you've got a big Federation, and you have an evil empire at the same time, or
exactly. Yeah, there's going to be there's several different I would say evil empires, and everybody's jockeying for the number one, and then there's also the good guys who are just trying to keep some kind of balance and semblance in the universe.
Okay, cool. All right, I'll definitely worth checking out. Offline, Space Booty.
Yeah, Space Booty.
I will probably try and get you to come on and run it either here or on our sister podcast, Babies with Knives. I didn't name that. But this looks like this would be a lot of fun to play. So, all right, cool. Well, hey, any listeners or viewers, Kickstarter, the game is called The Blackest Space. 10 more days. They're running down stretch goals, already funded. Manuscripts already written. So check it out now. You can't lose. Eric, appreciate your time, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Jacob, as always, thanks to you for coming on board, helping us out.
Glad to be here.
And to our listeners, we will catch you next time on the BAMF Podcast.